I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all know me, back where the girls all bow.
This is the North Carolina Theater Show. I'm your host, Lynn Pryor. James Johnson is our technical director. We're coming to you from a 100-year-old house, former home of the Gilbert Theater, here in historic Haymont, in Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is show number 14. Our guest tonight is the very talented Nathan Pierce. Nathan is a native of Fayetteville. He has impressed audiences with the breadth of his characterizations in numerous plays in our region. We're so glad to have him with us today. Nathan, welcome to the North Carolina Theater Story Show.
Why, thank you, Lynn. It's good to be here.
Great having you. Now, Nathan, we have just been listening to our wonderful theme song.
Yes.
Cole Porter's Longing for Dear Old Broadway. Hmm. Now, we've had so many guests being asked this question, and it's very interesting. Sometimes they say, I have no interest in Broadway.
No, I
would want to be somewhere else. I'd rather Chicago or in Dunn or wherever.
Nobody wants to be in Dunn.
Well, anyway, so, but I don't care what you say, but you have carte blanche to say, if you don't have to go to Broadway, but if you'd like to go to Broadway, what would you like to be doing up there?
I would love to do How to Succeed in Business, playing the lead role, which I cannot remember the character's name.
Obviously,
I would get the part because I don't know the role. Just cast me. No, I would love to do that show because I watched the movie version, which of course I can't remember the actor who played the character in that movie. But anyway, I like to sing, and my favorite song from that show is I Believe. I believe in you.
Robert Morris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, who's also on Mad Men.
Robert Morris is an old man.
Yeah.
In the Mad Men, that's right. Well, I'll be there in front row center for that, Nathan.
Thank you, Lynn. You'll still have to pay, though.
Well,
can't get you in for
free. Well, surely you'll have at least two comps.
No, don't call me Shirley.
Now, Nathan, I can see we're going to have a very good time today. And just don't be more amusing than the host.
Okay, I'll try not.
Is my advice. Now, you see before you a red box.
Yes.
Now, we've been doing this for years with my... Don't touch it yet. We've been doing this for years with my Sunday brunches here in the Gilbert Garden. But I transferred it to our podcast when we first started, and I'm so glad I did. I know some of our guests are not very happy about it because this is going to test your improvisational skills. Mm. We know what a fine actor you are. But how are you at improv?
I don't know.
Well, we're about to find out. And Mary McGee sitting there is your audience of one. And James looking very skeptical, which isn't very nice.
He doesn't count as an audience.
Well, it isn't very nice of him, too.
That's how my face looks.
Yeah, stop staring at me.
No,
default face.
It's very discouraging, James, for our guests when you give them that kind of look. I'm going to have to call your mother. There's no doubt about it. Anyway, let's move right on. Now, in a moment, I want you to open that box.
Okay.
You're going to take something out.
Okay.
And it could be a shrunken head. It could be a severed finger.
Why would you do that to me?
That's too morbid. I mean, Halloween is approaching. That's what you think.
Good point.
Anyway, you're going to take it and you're just going to describe to the... This is, after all, radio.
Yes.
You're going to describe very briefly what it is, and then you're going to spin a spell binding, a spell binding story, either true or made up. Or a combination. Are you ready?
I hope I am.
All right, off with that lid.
Okay, let's see. They are two golden... Oh, they look like salt and pepper shakers. And it's actually interesting you found these two because I actually have used these in my shotgun because they look like shotgun shells too.
God.
And when I don't have enough salt and pepper... on my eggs, I get really angry, and I'll stuff these in my shotgun and go hunting for some quail.
Well,
when I get angry, I know that was a very spellbinding story.
Well, it was spellbinding and frightening.
And true.
Well,
it was creative.
Don't mess with
and,
me.
And very, very creative. All right. Thank you for that. For your, it was very delicious, as I like to say. Now, here we are, so all too soon with our heart of our show with Nathan Pierce. And Nathan, I see that you have a, you know, I was saying to Bob, and not long ago, I said, every time I go to a play in this town or in this county, Nathan Pierce is in it in some capacity or other, a walk on, the lead, a character part, it just doesn't stop. And you were saying before the taping began that there was a point this year, was it last? This spring,
last fall,
yeah. When you were doing four plays.
Four or five shows, literally back to back. Yeah.
And it was a lot.
Yes. But I'm never doing that to myself again.
Well, okay, you have several witnesses here. I'll believe that. When actors say these things, but they don't really mean it.
Because they miss it.
And now I see that you have a list of the plays, that I saw most of them, I believe. Mm-hmm. And why don't you tell us about them briefly?
I've done numerous amounts of shows here, which I'm very thankful for. One of the amazing theater troupes that I'm a part of is actually Sweet Tea Shakespeare, which does, you know, you've seen shows with them.
Love Shakespeare.
They do indoor theater. Yes.
The listener might not know.
It's a local theater troupe here in Fayetteville that specializes in doing the classics, both outdoors and indoors. Outdoors is usually their summer shows. Indoors is winter shows. So
Shakespeare, but not always Shakespeare.
Not always Shakespeare. We actually just did The Cherry Orchard by Anton Chekhov this past summer.
I enjoyed it very much. So Sweet Tea Shakespeare.
I've done Love's Labor's Lost with them, where I played a hopeless romantic Spaniard. I did The Winter's Tale, where I played an angry Sicilian king, King Leontes. And I just recently did The Tempest, where I played the goddess of the rainbow, Iris. And so that was quite an interesting show, but beautiful show.
That it was so colorful. I was there closing night.
Goddess of the rainbow, Lynn.
Closing night. And it was just so colorful and inventive and festive and fun. And your voice was very clear and easy to understand.
Good.
Along with Ruth's,
mm-hmm.
another one who was a clarion voice.
Oh, yeah.
Every single syllable. And just like Hamlet would have advised you to do.
Exactly.
What else have you done?
I've done two shows with the Temple Theater in Sanford. I did Oklahoma, where I played a dancing cowboy, which I don't usually dance, and I'm not a cowboy. But I was in that show. And I did Hairspray, where I played three different characters in that show. So that was including Mr. Pinky, the eccentric owner of the plus-size dress shop.
Well, you were hilarious in that. But I loved you in the other one, too.
Oklahoma?
Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Yes. That was so well done. You know, you think of Oklahoma, and sometimes you think, oh, my God, not again.
Mm-hmm.
But it stands up.
It's a musical classic.
Well, it is. Absolutely. Yeah. Never can see it too many times. And you were a great part of that. And so, all right. We love our theater down in Sanford, the Temple, that wonderful Peggy Taphorn. Bob and I don't miss a single play down there these days. But what else? Isn't there another company?
There is. there are two more companies. I've had the honor of doing a show with Cape Fear Regional Theater. I did Amadeus with them, which was a two-night-only show. And I played multiple characters in that, which was the live orchestra. Just a beautiful show.
Well, it was superb. And I'm a season ticket holder for many, many years for the symphony. And to see that fine company on stage in the beautiful Seabrook Auditorium at Methodist State University in this, it wasn't a concert version. It was a full blocking and all. Mm-hmm,
full blocking.
But necessarily downstage because there was a 65-piece orchestra behind you.
Oh, yeah.
But you held your own.
It was beautiful.
Yes,
it was a beautiful show. And then, yeah, this one theater that I found, I don't know. It was the first theater I could find when I first moved, I moved back here. I was like, sure, I'll give it a shot. The Gilbert Theater.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yes. Which, actually, I love the Gilbert Theater because without the Gilbert Theater, I would not have made any of the connections with Sweet Tea Shakespeare. Because I did Pan, which was an original show written by Jeremy Fiebig, who is the artistic director of Sweet Tea Shakespeare. So that's how I got plugged in with them. My first show was A Christmas Carol.
Which version was that?
It was the smaller cast, multiple.
Was it the radio show?
No, it was the multiple characters per actor.
Well, that's right.
Smaller cast,
right?
Which I met Loft and Reiser in that show, who is the company manager of CFRT. So yeah. That's how I got plugged in there. And then because I got plugged in there, I got plugged in with the Temple.
This wonderful, wonderful cross-fertilization that happens in theater. And so what else did you do at the Gilbert?
I did A Christmas Carol twice, the same version twice. I did Pan, like I said. A Company of Wayward Saints, which was the most random but fantastic show
Done. Yeah, that was in rep, wasn't it?
Yes.
So that was when they did two plays in rep, meaning for the... remind us what rep is.
Rep is a group of actors that come together and they're guaranteed at least one show per season. And I actually wasn't part of the rep company yet. I am now. But they were very kind and allowed me to be a part of this show. And it was very fantastic. Some amazing actors were in the show. And so it was just a really good time.
I loved that story, and I like the whole idea. I'm told there are 12 to 15 rep actors,
yes. Yeah.
Men and women, creme de la creme. But then there are openings occasionally, and people, it's attrition, and somebody new will come in. Mm-hmm. So it's not just static.
Right.
So what else at the Gilbert?
I did one of the very first serious shows. I usually do, I've been doing a lot of comedies and stuff like that, but one of the first serious shows I did here in Fayetteville was Streetcar Named Desire, which was, the classic Streetcar. Everyone knows Streetcars. Marlon Brando,
Vivian Lee.
Yeah, Carl Malden, I think.
He played your part,
yeah.
Of Mitch.
Yeah.
1951, the movie. Unforgettable, Vivian Leigh getting the Academy Award for it. So it's one of my, it's a modern American classic,
yes.
I think in 1948. And so I'd like to talk at length about that, Nathan, if we may.
Yeah, of course.
So you knew the story. Was it because of the movie?
Yes, it's because of the movie. And I originally wanted to go, I originally wanted to go for the part of Stanley, but if you know me and you know my body type, which you can't know because it's a podcast, my body probably isn't the best suited for Stanley. So I figured I wasn't going to get that part, but I also love the character of Mitch because to me, the character of Mitch is more of who I am personally. So he's like the hopeless romantic who, this is going to sound really sad, but is alone in life and is searching for that special someone. And yes. So that kind of, I related more to that than...
So to review it for our listening audience, just briefly give us the plot.
Okay. It is a story of Stanley Kowalski and his wife, Stella.
Stella. No,
Stella, yeah. Yeah, the backwards.
Yeah, don't listen to James.
so shouldn't help him
Stanley and Stella are married, and Stella's sister Blanche comes into town. And is going to stay for a visit, and she makes up this story of why she's coming to visit. And you don't know, you find out later that she's basically lying, and she's poor, and she's been doing all this, going to hotels and stuff like that. And then you have the awesome, loving, everyone loves character, Mitch, who comes in, and he's like, wow, this Blanche is really cute, and I'm Malone, and she's cute.
So. And you're living with your mother.
And I'm living with my mother. Which is another thing I can actually relate to, because I live with my parents right now. So they get together, they go on a date. He really likes her, but then he finds out from Stanley, because Stanley's like, hey, Mitch is my best friend. So I'm going to tell Mitch what's going on with Blanche. So Mitch finds out. He's angry. He gets drunk. He yells at her. He says, you're nothing. You're dirt. You're gross. And he runs out. And so, basically, Blanche is left alone, and Stanley comes in and basically, essentially, rapes her, and which drives her even crazier than she already was. And by the end of the show, they drive her off to basically an insane asylum, and Mitch is totally distraught because he kind of still loves her, relates to her to a certain extent, because they're both alone in this world. And Stanley ends up Stella ends up staying with Stanley throughout all that stuff, and hopefully that was a good synopsis.
There was more than a synopsis here, spoiler monkey.
If you haven't seen the movie or the show, then poo on you.
I wanted you to do that. No, and you know, speaking of the movie, mm-hmm. in the movie, the censors would not let him use that ending.
Right.
In the play, she stays with Stanley. He starts feeling her mm-hmm. up, to use a crude phrase, mm-hmm. and she just gives in, and this goes dark as right. poor Blanche is led off to this asylum. In the movie, she leaves him.
Stella leaves
Stanley,
and you hear Stanley yelling her name.
Yes, and she says she has the baby, and she screams up, and she says, "I'm never going back there."
Yeah,
and so I don't know what Tennessee Williams thought about that.
Well, I think the play is a dark reality, because the movie shows what everyone would want to happen. You know. Of course Stella would run away from that. But a lot of people may not run away from an abusive relationship who has done all these terrible things, but that's all you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what you stay with.
So
I think the play is more based in reality as much as we don't want to admit that.
I think you're so right, Nathan. Now, so you knew the story from the movie.
I did.
And how did you prepare for the audition?
Well, I wasn't actually able to go to the in-person auditions. I sent a video audition, and I did a monologue from some random Western movie that I was able to show some dramatic chops with. And I just read the lines, and I knew going in what part I was going to go for. I wanted Stanley, but I was actually going for Mitch because I felt that was the role that would fit me the best. So I went in with that part in mind and just sent them the video and waited. And Brian, the director, messaged me a couple days later and said, hey, would you like to play Mitch? So I was like, yes, please.
Well, I was so pleased when I heard that you'd gotten that part. Now, so what do you generally do to prepare for a part? Here are these several dozen plays you've been doing mm-hmm. over these last couple of years. Do you just read them and reread them?
I find it hard to sit down and read scripts. I'm not able to fully prepare until I'm in the rehearsal process and blocking and around everybody.
On your feet.
Yeah, on my feet. And so... once I learn my blocking and I know where my character's going and what I'm supposed to be doing, that's when I fully can get into character. And sometimes, like with when I did The Tempest, I played a woman. So it was kind of difficult for me to get into character until basically we got our costumes for it. Uh-huh. And so once I had the costume on, I was able to be more, you know, feminine and more free yes. and moving and stuff like yeah. that. So it actually really does differ from show to show. But most of the time it's... I get really into character when I'm up on my feet on stage. So,
well, everyone is different. I love that old adage: sometimes the hood makes the monk. Right. You just simply doing something, like Olivier. I think you should say when he would get his nose right or his mm-hmm. beard right, suddenly things begin to really click.
Right.
Now, what we have, we had two professional actors join that cast, Amanda and Stanley, and both equity actors. And I know that for years the local company, another local company, used to say, we love bringing our people down from New York, because local actors can see them
exactly
before how they work and all. And so, did you find it instructive?
Oh yeah, fascinating. I mean, I know at first I was very intimidated, because you know I was working off of Amanda as Mitch, and so you know you have this person from New York who basically knows what they're doing, and that's what they do for a living.
Yes.
And then you have me, who's like, hey, I like theater, and I'll do this. But they, like, Amanda and Chris, who played Stanley, were just really nice, very friendly, very kind, very complimentary, very encouraging. And so by the end of it, you know, we were just a big family.
Yes.
So it was very difficult for them, you know, when the show was over and we all had to leave.
Yes.
Because it was funny, because, you know, Stanley and Mitch are best friends, so me and Chris actually hung out a lot.
Uh-huh.
And so I got to know him. And so, yeah, I mean, it started out kind of intimidating. Chris didn't come in, I don't think, until a little later than Amanda
That's
did.
Right.
So, but I loved it. I loved the process. I loved working with them. And like I said, they were very encouraging towards me, very complimentary of my acting, even when I felt I wasn't giving that much. Amanda was like, you're doing fine, you're doing great, you know, I love it, I love our scenes together. And so I wouldn't trade that experience for anything.
Well,
it was awesome.
Well, it's I'm thrilled to hear that how you experienced that. Now, would you describe, let's get kind of specific, more specific even,
okay,
describe the scene where you meet Blanche. Just briefly tell our listening audience where it was, this poker game, and then what was the process? How did you become such an effective Mitch? Of course, you're given this wonderful dialogue, and storyline. But tell us about it, and how did that evolve?
I think I already related really well to the character of Mitch, because, like, you know, he's a hopeless romantic, he's looking for that special someone, and he is extremely attracted to Blanche right away.
Yes.
And I've had experiences like that. I'm like, oh wow, that girl's really pretty, and then all of a sudden you get really giddy and you just don't know what to say. You're like, hey, how you doing? And that's basically what Mitch was.
Yes.
You know, he's kind of like a bumbling idiot. Yeah.
You know, later in the play, she says, I want to hear every last syllable you say, because you don't say much of anything.
Exactly. And
but
so,
it's a poker game. You're there.
Yeah.
It's a weekly poker game.
Mm-hmm.
She's there, surprisingly there.
Yeah.
And you see her.
Yeah. And, you know, I see her right away. I'm automatically attracted to her. And I try to play cool for my buddies, and which I think most guys do. You don't want to ruin the moment with your guys.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was able to take experiences I've had with failed, you know, trying to pick up lines with girls and stuff like that, and use that as Mitch, because he is trying to be this smooth, casual guy, but very bumbling, you know,
yeah,
but lovable at the same time. Like,
right, yes.
And that's what I loved about Mitch too. Like, all these characters have all these flaws, and of course Mitch did too.
Yeah.
But I would say, and I'm not just saying this because I played Mitch, I think he's the one that you like mostly through the entire show. Even when he gets angry at Blanche, you kind of understand where his anger is coming from.
Yes.
And so going back to that scene, I think I was able to use the fact that Mitch was basically me. I was basically playing myself in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
The bumbling, you know, trying to be cool but not really succeeding, even though he ends up succeeding by dancing with her to the radio. So.
Yeah, what that tells me is you're a mean drunk.
Well, the mean scene was the most difficult scene for me, because I'm not like that.
Yeah.
I've never gotten drunk, and, you know, one of the small details is, I don't know if you could tell this, but I'm not a smoker. So, and in this show, they smoke a lot.
Yes.
So, I don't know if you could tell. I wasn't the best at acting like I was smoking.
It didn't show, Nathan. But I used to say to actors, nothing human is foreign to me. Mm. And so no matter what you're called to portray in a play, you just have to find it in there. Yeah. And you certainly did that beautifully. So when Blanche meets Mitch, she says to Stella, her sister, he's different. And so the interest starts there on both sides. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if any of you, the movie person who saw the Woody Allen movie, that was it's the Streetcar Story. Mm-hmm. It was his movie last year. Lavender. Anyway, was it Gwyneth Paltrow? You must see it. Okay. It is the Streetcar Story, done today. Only its characters are different, but it's the same basic plot.
Right.
And it's absolutely heartbreaking. Once again, and James will find the title.
Blue Jasmine.
Okay. Yeah, I heard of that.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a bit of an aside. Please forgive me.
That's okay. This is your podcast.
Thank you. Now, in the very last scene.
Yes.
You know, I'm forever reading Uta Hagen and this one and that one about theater in general and so on. And it said, sometimes all that's necessary in a scene is to be in the moment, not really acting, mm-hmm. not tearing down the scenery, but let the audience do the work.
Yeah.
And that's what I thought you did with the final scene when Blanche is completely breaking down,
yeah.
and the people from the asylum are there to take her away. And you sit there at the poker table, and the others are kind of embarrassed, or Stanley is just being another jerk as usual.
Right.
But you were sitting there, heartbroken, conflicted. But I thought it was so smart that you did not overact or try stuff, but you just let those of us sitting there, we'd gotten to know you through the evening, and now we really knew who you were, what you were really feeling, and the problems you had with your mother, and this.
Well, I mean, and at that time, Mitch's mom had died, and so with Blanche being sent away, he literally felt all alone because his mother had died. I believe, I could be wrong.
I think
she was either, because I know she was deathly ill throughout the whole show.
Yeah, I don't think she had died. For years I thought, had his mother died,
then
we could have had a different story. But you see, when he said to her that when he was drunk and came to her and said, I can't take you to mother, you're not clean enough.
Yeah.
And that scene where she suddenly, Blanche just says something about fire or something, hell or something.
Yeah, she runs me off.
It's just an absolute electric. But then we see you for the last time when you're there for the poker game and you sit there, but you let the audience play the scene for you.
Yeah.
And I think that is such good advice for actors. Just a lot of the time, don't underestimate the audience. If you've been doing things right up to a critical point, then the audience is going to finish it for you. All right, now, so I wonder why, and I'd like James's opinion about this too, why is this play considered one of the great American classics?
I think it's because people can still relate to it. There's some shows that you see and they're kind of dated and the subject matter, you know, doesn't really reach out to the audience. But I think a show like this, like we discussed before, like with the changing of the ending in the movie. I mean, nowadays they probably wouldn't change the ending because they know that that's probably what would happen in real life, whether we want to look at it like that or not.
Yes, yes.
So I think that's why it's such a classic. Is because through all this time, you can still relate to it. There's something about it that's just like, there's, yeah, that's
how,
all I can really
well, how true. But it is just absolutely superb storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It has all those Aristotelian elements. It's just, and I was so proud and pleased and joyful about that midwinter theatrical yeah. event downtown.
I think that it was a sort of passing baton from sort of this old style of storytelling and acting to what Marlon Brando was doing, which was very different from what the other actors in the original film were doing, which was, it was more naturalistic sound to it, very sort of, it didn't sound like he was putting on a show.
Right.
And you could see that in the play as well, with the way that Amanda performed and the way that some of the other actors performed. Amanda, who, you know, I'm guessing it's almost in character to be putting on a show and putting on this sort of
because she's lying
right
the entire show to everyone. So
I think it's such a powerful part. You know, Vivian Leigh had her emotional problems. I think now we would call it bipolar, and so she was so superb, and it affected her emotionally in her life for some time afterward. Where so. People, actors and actresses, just give, and sometimes at great cost to themselves.
That was part one of this special episode of NC Theater Stories. To listen to part two, click episode Nathan Pierce, part two. Thank you.
To be back where the boys are.